Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp. This is one of your hosts, someone said host, co-host, Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck, and I'm here with my buddies. Hi, guys.
Hello, this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton.
And I'm your tri-host, Reverend Dr. Bill Holton. Good to be with everyone today.
Yes, and what about you?
And we are the co-owners of a Unity alternative ministry, which is called Unity Center for Universal Prosperity, YOU Universal Prosperity. And you can get there and visit us at ucfyp.com.
And you can get to our product mall by using a short route to get there called yourspiritualpractice.com.
Yes, indeed. Okay. And of course, I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where you can find my calendar and also the absolute word. And I'm giggling because we do this every program and we often have a hiccup. I think we have to script this, guys.
You think we would know who we are.
You think you know who you are by now. But I know one thing for sure. It's another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And that we know for sure. It's another beautiful day in my consciousness as well.
And it's another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness too.
And yes, it is. And we know it's true for every one of our listeners. And of course, we're continuing our series of science, fun science, pseudoscience, and spirituality. And today we actually have one that leans more towards the practical in some ways than we've been doing in the last few weeks. And so this is called Nurture Your Neurons. Nurture Your Neurons. And then, of course, at the end, we'll have an absolute word. So, Cher, have you been nurturing your neurons?
I have. I'd like to challenge our listeners to say that five times quickly because I've been practicing it. I had a little trouble getting my tongue around those words. Nurture your neurons.
Yeah.
So let's dive in because there's some really neat stuff here we can talk about. The article starts out by saying our brain drives every part of us, both automatic and manual. We influence or tweak our brain's performance with several things, and then there are listed how we perceive ourselves. And just as I'm reading these, I would invite our listeners, just think about how you do these things and how it does impact your brain and your actions and your how your brain works. So we tweak our brain's performance with how we perceive ourselves, how we perceive others, how we behave, the words we choose, the language we choose, which is something the three of us are big on, what we think, and what we believe.
Yeah, that's great. And I just noticed this quote at the top by Marissa Peer, who said, "The brain is brutal. Use it or lose it." Now, we wouldn't say that about our muscles, because our muscles are the same way.
About muscles, though.
Yeah, but we don't say they're brutal.
Oh, no. Just use them or lose them. Yeah,
use it or lose it. Yeah, okay. Well,
brutal is a strange word, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's, you say that. What's that all about?
And what's right. Interesting here with the what you read about the brain, about how perception and how we perceive and behave and choose, it doesn't say how we feel. And what's interesting about this, the reason I bring it up, is that our heart has over 60,000 neurons.
Yeah.
So I wonder if a big part of, quote unquote, how we feel comes more from the heart than the brain.
Yeah, I wonder about that because they did have what we think. And I'm just going to admit this to our listeners. We were going to jump over it, but that this writer still believes that consciousness is synonym for mind, which is synonym for brain. And that's where this bias might be coming in.
Yes.
And when we think about perception and words we choose and what we think and what we believe, all of us believe that's happening in our consciousness,
right,
which is correlated with the physical brain, but the brain isn't causing consciousness.
Exactly.
So we've got to keep our eyes on what else she says And of course, we're always open to having that challenge. But of course, our whole philosophy is going to pop like a balloon if science proves that our physical brains are actually producing this amazing thing we call consciousness, right? Yeah,
exactly. And you know, it's a lot like news coverage when you think about it. One of the terms Sarah and I have come up with the news cycle in this country is what we call post-traumatic news cycle discomfort. And what involves that is the very first time you hear a certain breaking news, as we're told, there's a lot of information that they haven't got yet. And yeah. some of the suppositions they make, some of the conclusions they draw, are much too early to be doing that then. It yes. takes several news cycles until all the information and evidence rolls out. Well, the same thing that Paul's mentioning here about our understanding of how the consciousness works in the brain even, is that it's much too early in humankind's attempt to understand consciousness for us to draw some pretty fast conclusions. And so the three of us are keeping our minds open because we do, as you know, question unquestioned answers.
Yes, indeed. So these are this is an answer we're constantly questioning because of the science we bump into, isn't it?
Yep.
Yes, indeed. So go ahead, Cher.
Okay, so the author goes on to say, we are sending messages to our brains every moment of our lives, even when asleep. Your brain is listening to your body, and your body is listening to your brain.
Okay, so wait, we got to stop there.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, because...
This is like reading Fillmore, isn't it?
Whoa, right, wait, right. Because that's anthropomorphizing the brain that it's listening. Yeah. It's not listening. It's a neurochemical process, isn't it, Phil? I mean, and a little bit of electrochemistry involved there across the synaptic gaps, but that makes it sound like the brain's listening, you know, like we're listening to each other. So yeah. we'll have to watch this, author, because I've read this a couple of times and I didn't notice this the first time I read it. So
yeah.
Bill, did you have more to add? I thought you did.
Yeah. Just to say that there's an amazing amount of evidence now in neuroscience that reminds us that the brain does not sleep. I'm sorry, the mind does not sleep.
Yes, the brain that would be our consciousness doesn't sleep.
Right, our consciousness doesn't sleep. The brain may sleep, quote unquote, and keep things in the subconsciousness, but consciousness itself doesn't sleep. It's active all the time.
So based on a little bit I know, there are parts of our physical brain that become more active while we're asleep, if I think.
And this is true, yes.
So then the whole brain can't be sleeping. So this is really, really interesting. Yep. This may be a three-part program. And not a two-part program. Okay,
very sure. Well might.
You go ahead.
Yeah, we're coming up to a quote from Psychology Today. So we can compare this quote with some of the other things we're talking about.
And if Psychology Today says it, it must be true.
Must be true, right? Okay, here's what comes from Psychology Today. The literature has demonstrated again and again that thoughts affect neurotransmitters, the chemical messengers that allow the brain to communicate with different parts of itself and the nervous system. Neurotransmitters control pretty much all the body's functions, from feeling happy to modulating hormones to dealing with stress. Therefore, our thoughts exert a direct influence on our bodies because the body interprets the messages coming from the brain to prepare us for whatever is expected.
Okay, we got to deconstruct this one too, don't we,
Bill? There's a lot there, yeah.
Because we would believe, and we haven't been disproven, that our thoughts are aspects of our consciousness and somehow. And so our thoughts affecting the output of what the brain puts, neurotransmitters, make sense. There's a correlation. I don't know if there's a full causation. There probably is. And we got to remind people that neurotransmitters are biochemicals, yes?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're chemical substances the body creates.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what we need to look at is the impact or the connection between what's happening neurophysically in our body and the thoughts that we control.
Right.
And so, the impact are, it's like it's a cycle, because the more thoughts we put in, it's kind of like mind action again.
Yeah.
What we're putting in affects that neurotransmitter message.
Yep.
And then that affects, we get to choose how we respond to that. Am I making sense?
Yeah. And I want to remind the listeners, because this is something we've talked about over the last 5 weeks, talking about consciousness, at least from the research that Dawson Church supplied to me and us in the book Mind to Matter, is that the thoughts we think help restructure the brain.
Wow,
and so if you have a repetitive thought, there's already a neural pathway for that. But if you stop thinking that thought, that neural pathway eventually gets broke. The brain, physical brain, breaks it down so it can be used to create new neural pathways. Mm-hmm, this is why Unity's process of denial and affirmation is not just a process of consciousness. It's a process that actually changes our physical brain.
Yep, our brain chemistry, yep.
Right, and that's where we get mind to matter. Mind is consciousness and matter the brain. So this is really breakthrough stuff, because it wasn't long ago that we had the belief, the scientists had the belief the brain couldn't change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which it really sounds silly when we look back, because everything else in our bodies change. So why wouldn't our brain change? You know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, that can explain what Unity calls chemicalization, that whole illness, kind of we get out of sorts or even sick when we're making major changes in our thinking.
Yep.
And this can help explain that, because it also has a chemical impact.
Yes, there would be a biochemical neurotransmitter aspect of that. And when we're teaching about chemicalization, we need to add that component.
Mm-hmm. We really do.
Because that makes it less woo-woo and more science-based.
Definitely less woo-woo. Yeah. Mm. Wow.
Okay.
Are you ready to go?
Are we ready to move into this wonderful, they have a great experiment example listed here that I think will really connect with people.
Good.
This is an example of an experiment that was conducted by the BBC, which illustrates the concept that we've just been talking about. In this experiment, the people pulled random individuals off the street, and they asked the first group to make a sentence using the words wise, fragile, sentimental, and obedient. When people left that experiment, they were walking slower, thought they were fragile, as if they had gotten old. The second group had to write a sentence, and that's interesting because they didn't say write on the first one, but I'm assuming that this was conducted effectively where they both did the same thing.
Right.
The second group had to write a sentence using the words freedom, passion, flexibility, ambition, fashion. They practically bounded out of the room. Why? Those were young words.
Wow. That's an interesting little experiment, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I
don't know how valid the experiment is. They don't give us any other information around that, but I certainly have seen the impact of words like that in some other experiments.
And so I would think these words, what they're doing is affecting our consciousness or our minds, not necessarily changing our physical brain. Because you think of old people are wise, old people are fragile, older people tend to be sentimental. I don't know about obedient. Certainly wouldn't use that word with my mother. At the other words, though, that were young words, I guess is the way they put it, freedom, passion, flexibility, ambition, fashion. So if we're painting with a broad brush, I would say those are generally speaking younger words. But we know people older. Well, what about us? Freedom, passion, flexibility, ambition, fashion. The only one that doesn't fit me is fashion. So I like to dress nice.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And here I am. I'm In a week, I'll be 68. All right. So I definitely am all about those words. So interesting. Mm-hmm. So go ahead.
And you, the whole thing is, even if you just look at words and think about how you feel when you hear those words, fragile, sentimental, obedient, you get a heaviness with those words, yeah, versus passion, flexibility, and ambition. It affects your energy level. And right, we've done some activities around words where, you know, tired, when you say, I feel tired, just the way you say it.
Yes.
Even if you're not, it brings the energy down versus, absolutely, I'm excited about that.
Yep.
Yeah. And you know, we had a question about obedience being listed in the first group, but there are nuances with a study like this. For example, this was conducted by the BBC. And as you look at that culture, obedience may mean a little bit different thing to them than it does us here.
Oh, yes, the British Broadcasting, yep, Company. Yeah. Makes sense.
I'm remembering, and I probably shouldn't do this on a live show because I didn't look ahead to research this.
Just
and
do
look it up. But it's reminding me of a research study we read, and I can't remember the woman's name who conducted it, but she's well known in this field. And they had taken 80-year-old men, and they all went to this place for a week, and half of them lived, they stayed in two different places, and half of them, it was taking them back 20 years in time. So they had those kind of TV shows on and that kind of food, and they dressed that way. And in the other, it was just where they are right now. And at the end of that time, when they left, the group that was living 10 years back or 20 years back, whatever it was, they were upright, they were walking faster, they had more flexibility. It was almost, I mean, it was just amazing to see the physical difference, wow, because of what they'd been doing, yeah, for that. I need to look that up again.
I don't know who did the research, but it was in one of Len McTaggart's books.
Yeah. And so the little work I did in nursing homes when I was in ministerial training, the difference of the energy when the older folks would walk in to a music session, and then they would play music from their era and sing along, their energy went way up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Way up. It is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
indeed. Yes, indeed. Okay.
All right. So do we want to do one more little piece?
Yeah,
of
let's
this?
Do one little piece.
Okay.
We've got about a minute, 2.5 minutes.
Okay. So we say your intention drives your life. So the question is posed here, how do you talk to your brain?
Yes.
And we might say consciousness as well. I don't know. Do you stay stuck where you are, churning bitter butter with negative self-talk? Me. Oh, God, I look old. Brain says, okay, sends the message through your neural network to create physiological responses that support your words.
Yep.
Or what about me? I hate to say me because I'm not the one who says this. The article says me. I'm a failure. Brain says, okay, I'll make sure you don't succeed at anything. Okay, yes, believe this? Do we think it's that strong? Just throw in the question.
I think there's correlation, not causation.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of agree with you.
So if you say, I'm a failure once, no problem. But if you keep repeating it over and over again.
And that's the difference, yeah.
It's going to have an impact.
But do we believe the brain says, I mean, I'm sure this is just kind of playing with it, but yep. I mean, the brain doesn't choose to do that. It's more, we're just sending that message to where we're actually now creating those.
It's impacting our consciousness. It's reshaping the brain, a neural pathway of I am a failure. But I don't think it might be sending out neurotransmitters that would have maybe a physical impact on the body symptoms of failure.
But we then make, if we say it enough and we believe it, then our choices also reflect that.
Yeah, and that's why it's under intention.
Right, right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're making this a little bit more black and white than I think it needs to be.
Yeah.
But we do know if someone keeps saying, I'm a failure, I'm a failure, I'm a failure, they're mm-hmm. going to be at least collecting evidence that they're a failure.
Oh, yeah. Because we talk about the power of the I am statement.
Yeah. Right. Yep.
It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
Yes, indeed. And it's not that. So is the brain involved? Yes. Is it causing you to not succeed? No. And that's why I'm going with correlation.
Yeah, it's just the brain's lighting up the areas that correspond to your intention.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. And I'll say again, I said at the early on is that the way we're reading this now is very different from the way I read it when I first discovered the article. So this to me is a lot of fun because I'm looking at who was me that read it before and now reading it. And it's really amazing.
And that's the fun part of discussing an article, yes, to get with other people and talk about it, because we pull out different things.
Absolutely. And if you read it a week later, it's a new you reading it anyway. Yep,
so for sure.
There you go. All right. So it's talking about going. We have to move forward and look at the absolute word. As a reminder, the absolute word is based on Sunday messages appearing in Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And this comes from Sunday, February 2nd, 2020. The word is guidance. Divine wisdom, love, and understanding are written on my heart and mind. Divine wisdom, love, and understanding are written on my heart and mind. In the Bible, the prophet Jeremiah shares an inspiring vision describing God's promise to put my law within them, and I will write it on their hearts. According to the revealing word, God as law is principle in action, which brings order to the universe and everything in it. The principle and law that God is are present in my mind and heart. I use them to guide my life. In the silence, I claim the wisdom, love, and understanding that are inherently mine, and I use them to guide myself. Through my prayer and meditation practice, I open to the highest use of spiritual law in my life. My understanding grows in harmony with my use of law, and my discernment leads me to make sound decisions in every area of my life. Divine wisdom, love, and understanding are written on my heart and mind. And right. So it is. Okay.
So it is.
All right, friends. Well, thank you, Bill. Thank you, Cher. Thank you, listeners. We appreciate you. And I am signing off. This is Paul saying goodbye for now.
Bye. This is Cher saying bye.
And this is Bill saying I'm taking my neurons with me.
Oh, yeah. It's like I'm taking my ball and I'm going home. Okay, goodbye, everybody.
Bye.